Hello, this is Jonathan Marks via PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another programme from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
Media Network, Radio Netherlands Weekly Communications Review with Jonathan Marks.
Hello, welcome to 30 minutes of musings from the media, in which we'll be scanning the bands and chancing on a new project or two, like this one, for instance.
This is going to be the biggest privately owned shortwave station in the world.
Really? Before that, though, let me slip in a bit of programme lineup information, because we're making some changes at the moment, and we've had some calls to the answer line from people asking what we're up to. Tomorrow at this time on Radio Netherlands, Piet Myers continues his series on Dutch rock groups in the Insights programme. And on Saturday, if you listen to our Pacific and North American services, Barry O'Dwyer is back with a series called Don't Take It For Granted. He'll be examining assumptions we make about daily life.
In a series of seven, we'll be discovering why the Dutch never draw their curtains, why there's no such thing as a bus ticket, why you can't shop in the evenings, and how the Dutch voter has little or no say in the choice of government. So, don't take it for granted and tune in on Saturdays, starting August the 17th.
That's in 2 days' time. The Sunday lineup with Happy Station remains unchanged, and Monday is still the day for science and technology. Eric Beauchemin presents a special investigation into dreams on August the 19th. Tuesday remains our day for arts and culture with images, but Wednesdays have changed from opera into a personal insight into the Netherlands. Next Wednesday, this guy is back, and he's got curtains on his mind too.
Hi, this is Piet Myers, and on Wednesday, August 21st, I'm back on the air with the second programme in our summer series, Hidden Holland. Now, in a country where everyone keeps their curtains open, you might well ask, what on earth is there to hide? Well, if you tune in, you'll find out, as I plan to take you to a couple of my favourite places where you won't find hordes of tourists and visitors. One is an extraordinary house in a small town called Doorn. It's the last resting place of the last emperor of Germany. How he came to live the last 20 years of his life in Holland is a tale not too familiar to people these days, and when we visit the house, you'll hear it all. And if you're a train enthusiast, then you can join me for a tour of the Dutch Railways Museum, which houses a marvellous collection of steam, electric, oh, just about every train that's ever run in Holland since 1839. Emperors and Engines, the two features in my Hidden Holland, August 21st.
Funny, I'm a train enthusiast like Pete, and I was amazed to find that a lot of colleagues in the media seem to share my passion. Maybe it's because the main line to Amsterdam runs past this radio station. If I could open the studio window, you'd hear them pass every 5 minutes or so. Let's move on and pick up the answer line.
Hello, Jonathan. This is Paul Morgan, GM1 India Sierra Delta, Coatbridge, Scotland. I've just recently started listening to Media Network and think it's one of the best programmes on shortwave.
Good gracious, what a marvellous accent. Thanks for the compliment, Paul. It makes our day. But so does critical response, like this letter from Aaron Pilchick, who lives in Coral Springs, Florida, USA.
While I find your programme well-produced and the best source for overall shortwave information, your comments from the listener in Boston on the shortwave radio offered on the Home Shopping Network here in the United States were elitist. I have listened to shortwave on analog radios on and off for almost 30 years. While my interest wanes at times, my shortwave radios have sufficed my needs without the need for digital to the second and third decimal point. My analog radios have picked up Asia and much of the Middle East with just a band spread and a whip antenna. Please do not believe that all your listeners are listening to you with $1,000 rigs and multi-element antennas. Otherwise, keep up the good work.
Aaron, we know that the vast majority of people listen to us on the simplest of shortwave portables. Our comments were more aimed at the fact that advertisements for shortwave receivers, along with the sales pitch you hear in shops, often raise expectations a lot higher than is really practical. As someone who reviews the shortwave portable market every 6 months or so, I'm very disappointed at what's currently on offer at the budget end of things. There used to be excellent radios on the world market with a good old point and dial and reasonable band spread from about $80 up. Digital tuning has made finding the station much easier, but if anything, the receiving part of the circuitry has got a lot worse, not least because the PLL synthesizer inside the radio generates its own noise. Looking at the Christmas catalogues coming in already, there tends to be a new trend where even the two major European receiver manufacturers have given up on making their own sets. They're buying in receivers made in the Far East to a much lower tolerance and just sticking their name on it. It's just not economic for them anymore to design and build budget receivers with a shortwave capability. And that's sad, because there's clearly a market for a no-frills analog radio with dual conversion, good band spread, pleasant audio, and a price tag of under $100.
Don't you wish you were better informed? Radio Netherlands, international public radio, direct from Europe.
Later today, we'll be printing some special QSL cards for the test transmissions due on the air between August 28th and the 1st of September. Look for us between midnight 30 and 0325 UTC on 9860 and 11655 kHz. 9860 and 11655. We'll be testing to South Asia. Back to the phone, and we switch to a bit of satellite news.
Paul Balster in Wembley, England. Media Network listeners in Western Europe may be interested to know that additional information on satellite television programmes in English is available with effect from 10th of August 1991. BBC Two CFAX is publishing on page 606 the programme listings for Lifestyle, Children's Channel, MTV, Eurosport and Screensport. This information is in addition to the listings for the five Sky TV channels, which have been available for some time, on page 605.
So that's pages 605 and 606 on BBC Two's CFAX. Rokus de Jode, Radio Netherlands Frequency Bureau, has been installing a satellite dish in his garden and picked up a few tips to pass on. One of these is the test transmissions from Quality Europe FM, which starts regular light music and speech programming today. Check Astra 1A, transponder 16, on 7.38 and 7.56 megahertz for their stereo signal. It's the Sky Movies channel on 11.435 gigahertz.
Broadcasting via the Astra satellite to 49 million homes in Europe, this is Quality Europe FM.
The hallmark of quality. Quality Europe FM.
If you would like to contact us on Quality Europe FM for messages or dedications, you may send us a fax on this number from anywhere in the UK, 0452 715 139, or from outside the UK, plus 44 452 715 139.
Quality Europe FM, PO Box 603, Gloucester, England, GL3 2QB.
But the hallmark slogan isn't new. If you had a medium wave radio in the 60s and you lived in northwestern Europe, you might remember this.
Hallmark of quality, Britain Radio.
Britain Radio was a short-lived offshore pirate radio station, operating just off the British coast, with the aim of bringing middle-of-the-road music and light entertainment to Britain's older generation. It'll be interesting to see what Quality FM achieve, especially as they've done nothing in the way of publicity for the new service, at least on this side of the North Sea. Meanwhile, in London, that incremental radio station carrying Asian language programming is back on the Astra 1B transponder 18 on 7.38 megahertz, and the quality's improved.
This is Sunrise Radio on 1413 kilohertz in London, 103.2 FM in Yorkshire, and on Channel 18 on the Astra satellite throughout the UK and Europe. This is Sunrise Radio Network News.
ये सनराइज रेडियो है। अब आप अक्रम मिन्हास से खबरें सुनिए।
On the same transponder 18, that's the movie channel, if you tune to 7.56 megahertz, you'll find a new Dutch language radio station that's on the air in mono. They're trying to program a mix of news, Dutch language folk music and lighter international repertoire.
11:45 tot aan het spookuur, het uurtje met Alain Delon en Shirley Bassey, want I Thought I'd Ring You komt eraan.
Getting busy out there. Bart Kuperus of the World Radio TV Handbook in Amsterdam faxed me details of yet another new satellite radio station, which will start operating on Wednesday, September the 4th. It's called Eclipse FM, and it'll operate from Jersey in the Channel Islands. Programme director Peter McClinton says their programmes are for young male adults looking for sports news and rock music. They'll be broadcasting round the clock as a subcarrier on the back of Sky Sports. You'll find them on Astra 1B, Transponder 20, using the 7.56 megahertz subcarrier. Well, in other parts of the world, it's interesting to see the reaction from governments to this explosion of entertainment that's starting to be beamed down from the sky. Ginger De Silva reports.
Malaysia has banned the use of private satellite dishes to receive direct television broadcasts from abroad. Information Minister Mohamed Rahmat said they have rather strict censorship in that country, and the government wants to know what's arriving from the sky. Mohamed told reporters that the government had looked into the pros and cons of home satellite reception, and the cabinet had said no. The Telecommunications Act will soon be amended to take into account the ban. Malaysia currently allows snippets of foreign television, including cable news network, but the information minister said no decision had yet been taken on whether to allow cable television to be made available freely in the country. Predominantly Muslim, Malaysia has three television channels, two run by the state-owned Radio Television Malaysia, known as RTM, and one by a private company. The government plans to privatize RTM soon, but will not allow a fourth channel to be set up. The government is of the opinion that too much television would prevent Malaysia's 18 million people from concentrating on their work.
That's bad news for many world television operations like BBC and CNN, because if that trend spreads, it'll make their planned moves into Asia very difficult. Back to short and medium wave, and Arthur Cushion has a selection of news and notes now from his neck of the woods, namely Invercargill, New Zealand.
In New Zealand, the Totalisator Agency Board, which is a government agency that looks after betting, is putting together a network of 16 stations. 702 Auckland, 711 Wellington and 963 Hamilton are in operation. A further 7 stations in the North Island on FM and 6 in the South Island on FM should be operating by the end of the year. Now, New Zealand is to add another language, and that is Japanese. A test transmission in Japanese on Saturday, commencing Saturday, August 31, and repeated Sunday, September 1, will be carried at 1100 hours on 9700 kilohertz. This test will continue through until November. Radio New Zealand International has a frequency change on September 1 from 1800 to 2200, to 15120, that's replacing the channel of 13785 kilohertz. For many years in New Zealand, on teletext we've had the X information, and that's widely read by television viewers. It's recently changed its page number, and teletext information for the DX listener in New Zealand is now on page 397. Vatican. Three frequencies used by the Vatican Radio for its broadcast to New Zealand. English is 2245 to 2315. The channels are 9600, which is a new frequency, 11830 and 15105 kHz. Those three channels in English at 2245 from the Vatican Radio.
Now, how can you make sure that the present remains in the future once it becomes the past? Well, we send out some 15,000 QSL cards a year to listeners of our English programmes. Those are the specially prepared postcards which are sent out in response to a correct reception report. That means about $6,000 in postage, plus another couple of thousand for the cards themselves. Meanwhile, at this moment, I'm sure in many offices around the world, the secretary is typing out a verification card for another radio station. And when you stop to think about it, international radio spends an enormous amount of money on these pieces of paper. Sadly, stations are spending virtually nothing at all maintaining an archive of what they sound like now, what they've also sent out at that time, so that future generations will be able to find out what radio sounded like in the early 1990s. Money has gone to television, and proposals for a portrait of the radio scene are discarded with the comment that radio is now a fast-moving and throwaway medium. That's where listeners come in, plus the efforts of one European international broadcaster.
Radio Österreich International.
Radio Austria International.
A few weeks ago, I met up again with Wolf Harrant, who's media editor for Radio Austria International's German service. He collects QSL cards, which he says provide a unique record of what stations were doing at any one time. What's more, he's organised the collection officially, so that it makes regular tours of European radio exhibitions. And having seen it at Friedrichshafen a few weeks back, I'm impressed. I asked him why he's so interested in preserving these little bits of paper.
Why not? What's going to happen to all these beautiful QSL cards once the listener stops being a listener or a DX, a QSL collector? These cards are being put away somewhere in a shoebox, in the attic, in the cellar, in a dustbin. And we don't want these cards to end up in the dustbin. We want them to end up in our files to be kept for 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, 100 years, you never know.
And how has it been organised? I mean, what have you done so far? Because, you have just started. It's been going for some years.
We have been collecting broadcast paraphernalia for the past 20 years, in fact, or 25 years, in fact. We have been collecting station idents on tape, car stickers and QSL cards and pennants, simply on an unofficial basis, so to say. Then we started to make this an official project, sponsored by Radio Austria International, by ADXB, which is the Austrian DXS organization, and by ÖVSV, which is the Austrian Ham Radio Society, because this is one of the newer things. We are collecting ham radio, amateur radio, QSLs, as well as BC QSLs.
Why? I mean, for example, if somebody's heard a special expedition, let's say, to the North Pole, again, isn't that very personal? They've heard it and no one else?
Yes, it is a personal thing, but at the same time, it is a document of international understanding and communication of technical development. And if you need not even take these old, rare cards. Just take a G8 card or take a shortwave listener's report from 1932. It's quite fascinating. It is, indeed.
Okay, now, if people have got a collection and they want to get in touch, obviously you don't just want them to send the QSL cards in the post. You presumably want them to get in touch with you to tell them what you've got.
Not necessarily. We really accept everything we get. We are not afraid of doubles. We've got something like approximately 200,000 cards. So far, we ask people to do three things. First of all, we're quite happy if they just sign our declaration of support, which simply reads, I support the ideas of a QSL collection, because we want to operate on a worldwide level. And if people read that a French and an American and a New Zealander are supporting this, this might add to our credibility. Number two, we ask people, whenever they discard or throw out all cards they don't use again, doubles, not to throw them away, but to send them to us. And number three, and this is the most difficult thing for psychological reasons, we invite people to include in their files a slip of paper saying that my collection is being dedicated to QSL collection and should be, sooner or later, being forwarded to them.
So, the contact address, if you're interested, is this. QSL Collection, Radio Austria International, A1136, Vienna, Austria. That's QSL Collection, Radio Austria International, A1136, Vienna, Austria. Attention, Wolf Harrant.
Excuse me, could I have your attention for a moment? What are you going to be doing when this broadcast is over? Sit there picking your spots until our little transmitter comes sputtering onto the wireless bands tomorrow night? Of course not. You're going to be tuning around, searching for other delights from around the world. But if you want to get the full impact out of your shortwave wireless, then have we got the booklet for you.
But have we?
Yes, we have. The Booklist, Edition 13. Oh, look, here comes somebody else.
Radio Netherlands in magnificent mono.
Radio Netherlands Booklist Edition 13 is out now with more free information about international radio than ever before. For your copy, well, drop a line to this address. The Booklist, English Section, Radio Netherlands, P.O. Box 222, 1200 JG, Hilversum, the Netherlands. That's The Booklist, English Section, Radio Netherlands, P.O. Box 222, 1200 JG, Hilversum, the Netherlands. Trust Radio Netherlands to come up with something different.
Now to the US, where it seems there's a very grand plan to launch a private religious station, and that plan's taking shape. Today is the 10th anniversary of one of the largest religious cable networks in America, based in Alabama. George Jacobs is their consulting frequency engineer for shortwave. He's based in Silver Spring, Maryland, and he's been explaining to me that they have some very grand plans indeed.
Well, the plans have already been filed with the FCC. We've applied for a construction permit. It's in the process of being reviewed now. We hope to have the construction permit perhaps as early as November, and then construction will begin. And it should be completed in about 2 years' time. It'll consist of four 500-kilowatt transmitters, the brand-new transmitters made by Continental, and a very large number of curtain antennas that are being produced by TCI here in America. And they'll be pointing in just about every direction, North America, South America, Europe, and Africa.
Who's behind it?
Basically, you might say in a generic sense, the Catholic Church, although the organization behind it is the operator of the largest religious cable network here in America. The Eternal Word Television Network. I don't know whether it's seen on European cable. I think it is in some countries. It reaches 22 million homes here in America, and they're going now into bringing it to the world. A lot of what's on the cable network will simulcast on the shortwave in about at least a dozen different languages.
Four 500s, I mean, that's also quite a bit in terms of power. I mean, isn't 100 kilowatts enough in the target area that you're talking about?
No, it's not. They had originally planned to have lower power transmitters here in the United States and another moderately high power, say 250 kilowatt, several transmitters in a European country. Plans did not materialize for that. And they decided that they would do all of their broadcasting from the United States so that they need much higher power to reach into Africa and into Europe from the United States than they would have, say, from Europe. Also, the transmitters will be capable of operating at the 250 kW level for distances shorter.
And why the transmitter site in Alabama?
Transmitter site is in Alabama because that's where the headquarters are for this particular branch of the Catholic Church, and also because that's where the headquarters are for the cable network.
But it's not affiliated with Vatican Radio?
No, it's not affiliated with Vatican Radio, no. It's a monastery called the Lady of Angelus, and it's, of course, affiliated with the church, but not with Vatican Radio, no.
George Jacobs on the line from Silver Spring, Maryland. On line two is Lou Josephs in Boston. He's got a utility tip for us, first of all. It'll be relevant if you like listening to the air traffic control for passenger aircraft crossing the Atlantic.
Here's the deal. If you listen to any of these transatlantic frequencies, you might try 13.354. It's a new frequency that's currently being tested out of New York, and the Santa Maria site will begin using it in the near future, with it available for use on the North Atlantic Path beginning on the 19th of September at 0901 UTC.
And what do you hear on that frequency?
Right now you just hear ground-to-air traffic from one airline to the airline's office.
Now, back to broadcasting. Seems a couple of weeks ago you mentioned that WWCR in Nashville was testing a second transmitter, and now that's firmed up in terms of its content.
Yes, if you're a fan of Dr. Gene Scott, the second transmitter of WWCR is turned into all Gene Scott all the time.
Well, most of the time. 24 hours at weekends. Mondays to Fridays, it's heard in Europe quite well in the evening hours, around 18 hours on 17525 kilohertz.
For a free copy of Dr. Scott's magazine, The Truth About, or the University Cathedral Pulpit, call 1-800-338-3030 in the United States. From outside the United States, call Collect to area code 818-240-8151. Those phone numbers again are...
Call Collect, that's interesting. So, who is Dr. Gene Scott?
Well, Dr. Gene Scott runs a religious program on cable, and he also does a lot of religious broadcasting in the United States on medium wave FM, and he's also the current voice that you hear overnight on the Caribbean Beacon.
Because he owns that station, doesn't he?
That's correct, and there's rumors afloat that he's going to add a shortwave transmitter to that facility.
Do we know how big, or is it just a rumor?
It's just a rumor, but based on what we've seen in the Caribbean previous to this, I think we'd be looking at probably a 50-kilowatt or 100-kilowatt transmitter.
And what else is happening in the Caribbean?
Well, Radio Vision Christiana, those are the people that own the Atlantic Beacon, are going to put up a 100-kilowatt transmitter on 530 kilohertz, and that should be in operation in a couple of years.
Which island is that?
That'll be on the South Caicos Islands in the British West Indies.
How far do you think they'll get out?
Well, with 100 kilowatts on a low frequency like 530, that's going to pretty much cover the east coast of North America and most of the Caribbean.
Thanks, Lou. Now we're off to Asia, I believe.
Hi, Jonathan. This is Gordon Darling in Port Moresby in Papua New Guinea. I've just noted today, that's Wednesday, my local time, the English service of the Philippines Broadcasting Service, identifying as Radio Filipinas, on 21580 and 17840 kilohertz, closing at 0330 UTC. They announced that English is broadcast daily from 0200 to 0330 UTC, and they also said they would return tomorrow morning from 1800 UTC on 15190 kilohertz, 17840 kilohertz, and 21455 kilohertz. Now, I don't know, Jonathan, whether this is new equipment or via the VOA Poro Tenang facility, but it's certainly a very, very big signal here in Papua New Guinea, and it should get out very, very nicely all around the world.
Those channels again, 21580 and 17840 at 0330 UTC. I note a flood of calls in the last few hours about the time signal station, WWV, on 5, 10 and 15 megahertz.
Well, this is Chris Swank from San Jose, California, United States of America, and I found something interesting this week. I'm recording this Wednesday night, August the 15th, and the time announcements have changed somewhat on WWV. That is, the voice is different and also the phrasing is different. I have the feeling that they've given up their old drum recorders for a new voice and perhaps new technology.
Bruce Atchinson in Alberta, Canada, tells me that the sister station, WWVH, in Hawaii, has got a digital presenter too.
Actually, they've got a female digital voice announcing the time and announcing the ID at the hour and the half hour. And best of all, they've got the aloha back. I miss that, except the lady voice sounds a bit like she's got a cold.
Now I've got 3 seconds left to do this. And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.